Now that heart is beating fast, and that's the rhythm I can dance to. I'm mighty glad I've got a chance to that one big heart that's beating fast. Tomorrow morning, let it rain. Tomorrow morning, let it pour. Tonight, we're in the groove together. Ain't gonna worry about stormy.
Welcome to Radical Australia on Community Radio 3CR. We are continuing our series of talking to very old people who've come, who've been at 3CR in the early days. Just to remind you, there is a birthday party on Saturday, the 4th of July, at Collingwood Town Hall, which is in Abbotsford on Hoddle Street, starting at 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I am sure that our guest, Phil, not Philip, I've been told, Dalliston, D-A-L-L-I-S-T-O-N. Hello, Phil.
Well, look, I'll only come if you're going to have a caged match, mixed martial arts, like that other birthday party celebration recently.
Yeah, Phil, you're the entertainment.
Okay, so it's you and me stepping in a ring.
I'm not going to step in with you. I'm not going to step in with an old bugger like you. How old are you?
It's good. Roughly. I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
No, roughly. Come on, Phil. Tell us your age. Come on, you're here in the early days.
I won't see my 50s again. Okay,
well, just how about your 70s?
I'm not that old.
No. You're not that old.
No.
So, were you born here?
Yeah.
Where?
I was born here in Melbourne.
In Melbourne?
In Melbourne.
Where? Jesse McPherson.
I can't remember. I can't remember the hospital although it's on the, I'm sure it's on the birth certificate, but yeah. I've never bothered to look.
No. Your mum never told you?
Not something I really was that concerned about, which hospital.
Fair enough. Are your parents still alive?
No, sadly.
Yeah, not. Tell us about your mum.
What do you want to know?
Well, her name, that'd be nice.
My mum passed away only a few years ago, recently.
Yeah.
But she was living back in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, I was not able to get over there because it's during COVID, and as I was trying to, travel restrictions, I was doing what I could to try and get over, but unfortunately.
No. What's her name? What was her name?
Mum's name was Janet.
Janet. And where was she living when she died?
In Greece.
Greece. Yeah. Right. She'd been there for a while or?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And what was she like as a mum?
Oh, well, yeah, geez, what do you want to know?
Well, was she tough or? Well, you know, looking at you, I think she needed to be a bit tough.
Tough but fair.
And how about your dad?
Well, my dad passed away quite some years ago. I didn't really have a great deal to do with him. Have a stepfather and a stepfather who is still alive, lives here in Melbourne.
Right.
And that's the story pretty much. And I was at La Trobe University.
Hang on. I asked the questions. Come on. There's 56 minutes here. I got to fill in, mate. I warned you, Phil. You didn't bring your bagpipes.
You didn't warn me.
Well, I didn't organise you.
You didn't warn me.
Management organised you. I said, I need some old farts to turn up to talk about the early days. And they said, oh, how about Phil?
Well, and I was, I'm thinking a musical interlude. You don't do musical interludes.
No.
That's shocking.
Hang on. You got any siblings, any brothers and sisters?
No. None.
You poor mum having to put up with you.
Yeah, well.
Poor thing. What'd your stepdad do for a crust?
I think now, because I haven't seen him for a while, but think he was doing counselling.
Counselling?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. And did your mum do work outside the house or? What?
Yeah, public service.
Public service. Yeah. All right, so where did you go to primary school? As I said, we've got to fill 56 minutes. I've got to build you up, mate.
Oh, jeez.
You've forgotten?
No, I went to Greensboro.
Greensboro.
Greensboro Primary. I went to...
Hang on. In those days, Greensboro would have been country.
Sort of, yeah.
Did you have apple orchards?
Certainly out of suburban.
Yeah, did you have apple orchards? I remember there's apple orchards down that way they used to be.
Not when I was there. You're thinking a little
Templestowe,
which had the apple orchards and still does.
Obviously, you went to Greensboro Primary.
Yeah.
What was life like for a little kid then?
I don't know. I mean...
You spent 7 years at school and you don't remember anything.
I wasn't expecting to talk about all this sort of stuff. I thought we were talking about the program and everything.
We're talking about you, Phil, and obviously the program is part of you. 3CR is part of you, Phil. So you need to expose yourself. So what was it like down there at Greensboro Primary?
It was a fairly... standard suburban school life, I would imagine.
Do you have any? Any Greeks, Croats, Italians turned up, or was it mainly Irish and English?
Look, actually, back then there was probably predominantly your Anglo-Celtic. Predominantly your Anglo-Celtic. It would have been when I went to. High school that I started because I went to high school in Carlton.
I'm going to
jump ahead, but that's what I'm just going to say. That's when I got
high school, Carlton.
Yeah, and that's when obviously you came from Greensboro, which is a very Anglo-Celtic area, and then you do get
Carlton,
where you've got a very multicultural.
Was that in the '60s or?
That was in the 70s. Early 80s.
So how does the lad get from Greensboro to Carlton? Big change, mate.
From
steak sandwiches to souvlakis. How does that happen?
Because my parents bought a house there. That's probably why. You'd have to ask them. You'd have to ask them.
Well, they're not here, are they? How can I ask them?
Well, you can't. But that would be the reason. That's why I ended up in Carlton, and certainly a lot more multicultural. Though, of course, Greensboro's changed a lot now. It's significantly different than what it was.
Oh, it sure is.
As everywhere is, as what things were 50, 60 years ago.
That's right. Yeah,
and. If you look at the multiculturalism and the diversity there now as compared to... It's just a complete shift.
When was the last time you were in Greensboro?
A day or two ago.
What were you doing in Greensboro?
Because I live not far from there, and so I do my shopping there.
So you went from Greensboro to Carlton to Greensboro?
I can't afford property prices in Carlton. Come on.
Oh, come on. Didn't your parents leave you the house? Oh, God, what a mistake. Can I tell you a funny story?
Go on.
Yeah,
please do.
Give you a break. I know you're looking a bit distressed there. Funny story. A lot of Italians used to live in Carlton, as you know, right? Now, the well-off Italian, they moved to Bulleen, right? And the more poorer Italians stayed in Carlton. But the irony is the prices of houses in Carlton are now more than in Bulleen.
But, of course, and they built the Veneti Club out there?
Yeah, Veneto Club.
Which I actually spoke to a guy once whose father was, I think, involved in setting that up. And back then, when they set that up, it was all the community just pitching in to get that property. Yeah. And, of course, property prices in Bulleen, of course, have shot up considerably.
Exactly.
And back then they got all that
land,
for next to nothing. So, obviously, they've done quite well now.
Currently it's a little island. I go past it a few times a week and it's construction of roads everywhere. It's stuck as a little island there. And it's still got its little gondola. Gondola in the front. Now, let's get back. Carlton, what high school? Well, obviously private school for a lad like you, Phil.
Princess Hill High.
Oh, you disappointed me. I thought you would have gone to a private school. No, Princess
Ohio.
What was that like?
Oh, that was all right.
What do you mean all right? School. What do you mean?
That was a school. I mean,
well, you went there for 5 years. Know. Your formative years.
I don't know.
You don't. Oh, come on, Phil. You know, you obviously got into trouble. That's why you don't want to speak about it. I mean, you're not on the honour board there, are you? You weren't a prefect.
No. But look, I don't know. What do you say about your schooling years? Most people, myself included, probably try best to forget them.
Why?
Oh, you know, I don't know why you really want to harken back to the past. Surely we should be looking forward.
Remember the old Jesuit saying, give me a boy to the age of 7 and I'll show you the man. And that's what we're doing. I want to show people your experiences, where you came from and why you gravitated to this dump. All right?
The stormtroopers of the Catholic
Church.
That's
right, yeah. They knew. You get them up to the age of 7, then you've converted them for life. So is there any particular teacher that influenced you in Princess High School? No. Did they have the cane in those days, or is that all gone by then?
That was actually being phased out then. Mm. Back when primary school, you did still have that corporal punishment.
The strap.
And you would still get corporal punishment then, but it's sort of been phased out at that stage. But people don't realise now, you know, what it was like back in schools when some of the things were quite barbaric, really, when you think about it.
That's why I'm talking there. People don't understand these things, Phil.
When you think about that now, and you people would be shocked.
Yeah.
You look at the strap, and there was something that we didn't have it at our school, but I know they used to use it in the school system, certainly in the UK up until the 70s, and that was called a tawse. Are you familiar with those?
Would you like to explain? Please explain.
And a tawse is a piece of leather.
Yeah.
It's like about, in thickness, it's about, that's probably over a centimetre, nearly 2 centimetres thick. Mm. Solid piece of animal hide. And they would
back of the legs.
Hit kids with that, you think?
Yeah, batter the legs.
It's not a strap. It's not like a belt, something you wear around your waist. This is something really quite solid. And those sorts of things, you think, geez, that's... looking back on that now and you think, geez, that people were allowed to get away with that.
It was legal, mate. Yeah. Nothing illegal about it, being strapped on the legs, you know. One of my most interesting experiences, I was in primary school. Only the headmaster could cane you. Anybody could strap you because I'm about 10 years older than you are. I'm in my 70s. And I went in for my caning, you know, and I put out my hand and I was going to get 6 of the best. I don't know what I did wrong. 1, 2, 3, 4th cane. The cane broke. It flew into the air and he looked at me and he says, "What have you done, Toscana? I've had this for 40 years. I'm a little kid. I'm thinking, what's it got to do with me?"
Look, a friend of mine was telling me how one of his teachers actually used to take a run-up, like he was a bowler in a cricket match. So he'd be getting a run-up and he'd run into the, running down the pitch, child would be at the other end and he'd have his strap and just
whack. Yeah. So none of this at high school, mate.
No. You
would have fought back.
No. Well, it's at that period of time where those sorts of things were being phased out. Possibly for the better.
I don't know. Spare the rod, you know.
Look, sometimes you do sort of think, oh, geez, a bit of corporal punishment, that's what we need.
And we also need conscription.
Conscription.
At the age of 16, get them early before they leave high school.
And crucifixion, that'd be good. Best thing the Romans ever did for us.
Well, that's right. Whatever the Romans did. Yeah, I don't know.
What have they ever done for us?
No, I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, this sounds pretty boring, you know. You born in Melbourne, you go to Greensboro, you go to primary school, nothing happens apart from the strap. And then you come to high school, you can't remember anything. Did you actually graduate?
Yeah, yeah. I went to university.
I can't believe
I went to
this.
University.
You graduated from high school.
I went to La Trobe.
So what stream did you do in high school?
I did history because I went...
High school. What stream?
Well, not sciences, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, yeah. You did history, French, English, all that stuff.
I didn't really do French, if you ask.
Languages are
not my forte.
All right, okay, all right. So
languages are not my forte, right, but history.
Yeah.
History, quite interested in history.
Yeah. So that's VCE they had those days or something else?
I did HSC when I graduated. So I did HSC.
So you're brilliant enough to get into La Trobe, were you?
Into La Trobe, yep.
Yeah. What year was that?
It's got a... I think it must have been about 83. Would that be right? 83.
So here you are in high school. Things are changing. You got the Vietnam protests. You got, you know, women's liberation. You got anti-conscription movement. And you're in high school. And this all just... went over your bloody head, did it?
Well, pretty much. But then again, Vietnam, that's a bit earlier than that.
Yeah, yeah, 60s, late 60s, early 70s.
70s. It was university before I started to take an interest in politics.
Before you were radicalised. That's the key word.
Oh, well, yeah, if you want to look at it that way, I don't necessarily think radicalised. It's just the way I took an interest in politics.
All right, let's go back. You go to La Trobe. You're looking at all the opportunities you've got. And what did you choose to study at La Trobe?
Well, geez,
you've forgotten.
Well, there was prehistory.
Before history, prehistory.
There was prehistory. There was. I can't even remember the names of the units, but they involved studying Africa, British colonialism in Africa,
right.
India, Ireland. There was another unit on Chinese history, medieval, and another one on ancient.
So you did a history?
Yeah.
Undergraduate degree?
Yeah.
Did you finish?
Yes, I did, yeah.
And did you then do postgraduate work?
I deferred and deferred and then just didn't defer anymore. It just
So what was life like at La Trobe in those days, the early 80s, mid 80s?
Yeah, look, I mean, there was a lot of student activism, of course.
Around what subjects, what things?
And one of them was around, that was the time when they were reintroducing fees.
Ah, good. Yeah.
So that was pretty significant because they were introducing, because of course the Whitlam government had made tertiary education free, and that was a significant shift. And that certainly created a lot of political activity in the Student Representative Council at La Trobe. At that time, probably didn't make much difference because, of course, they introduced fees. And, of course, fee-paying students, that's a big business for universities and they've become reliant on it.
Yeah, well, it killed radical activity.
Well, dare I say that the universities became addicted to it.
Addicted?
Addicted. Well, yeah, addicted to fee paying.
Addicted to gambling, I think. Really? It's the same thing, isn't it?
Know.
Fees, you know.
Yeah, but, I mean, look at the building projects that went on a lot of universities and tertiary education providers. Yeah, you know, massive building projects, and all of that was funded.
So
by
fees. Anything
students.
Else that you remember that were kind of got people's goat up at the university?
Well, everyone had their own, if you like, pet projects.
What was your pet project?
Mine was Ireland.
Ireland.
Mine was Ireland.
Why? You're not Irish.
Mine was
You're
Ireland.
You're born here. Was your mother Irish?
Well, I come from an Irish family.
background. When you come from an Irish family, Dad didn't tell me about that.
My background's, my family come, I'm first generation Australian, and my family came out via England, but from Ireland.
What part of Ireland?
Well, Cork.
Oh, obviously says Cork. Now, this surname. Look, I've interviewed a lot of chaps and women and in between since I've been here. I've been here 49 years, but Dalliston, I've never spoken to a Dalliston.
It's not a very common name.
Where's it come from?
I think it comes from old Norman French, probably the William the Conqueror, the Norman Conquests.
I'm a bit confused. Did the Normans conquest Ireland, did they?
Well, actually, they did.
Because you're the history major. Tell us about it. They actually did.
Someone called Strongbow.
All right. Uh-huh. Strongbow. Yeah.
Like the cider.
Yeah, we both came to like we the both cider. Must be alcoholics. We both came to that.
But no, the Normans, of course, 1066, Battle of Hastings.
Yep.
Basically, they took over management from the Anglo-Saxons of Britain. But then, of course, they actually dabbled over in Ireland because they were invited, by a certain exiled king, and so they're invited over there, the Normans, and arrived. It was Strongbow, and he arrived from I think Wales, developed a foothold in Ireland, and so he did have an Anglo-Norman presence in Ireland, where they established themselves around Dublin, that was called the Pale.
That's beyond the Pale.
And exactly the right. Fence. Exactly right. That's where that terminology or that phrase comes from. Yeah. Beyond the Pale.
Yeah. So you were the civilized ones inside the Pale, or were you the heathens outside the Pale? Your family.
I'd imagine there would be a bit of both. A bit of everything. Yeah. But I'm not one of these people who goes on and looks at their family tree and does.
So you haven't done
You
haven't done your ancestry.com.
And does their DNA.
Makes two of us. What's the point? They're all dead.
And apart from that, you never know where your DNA is going to end up anyway. And there might be some surprises that you don't want to know about.
Well, there are always surprises you don't want to know about. So did your parents talk about their Irish background and their experiences or just...
To some extent. I think my mother was. I mean, that time you had. Not necessarily to that extent, but you had Paul McCartney with his Ireland for the Irish songs and all those sorts of things. So there was always that undercurrent of Irish identity.
Right. Did you drink green beer on the 17th of March?
No, I can't.
Don't do any of that stuff. You don't do jigs and play music or.
Oh, look, I like the music. I like the culture, like the history.
Right.
You know, but I'm not going to drink beer. Green beer. I mean, that's a bit
sacrilege. It's an American thing, isn't it? Isn't it an American thing? Irish in America did that?
They certainly do it. I don't know. I don't know where it actually originates from.
Yeah, well, you're a history major. You should know these things.
Yeah, but look, I don't think I really want to devote my life to a thesis of who started...
Well, have you done a thesis?
Who started doing green beer? No.
You haven't. Well, it's about time, isn't it?
But if you watch that film, was it The Fugitive, with Harrison Ford, there's the scene in that where they've dyed the entire river green.
All right, so you said you deferred and you deferred and you deferred. Any particular reason you deferred doing your honours or your master's or your doctorate?
You just get caught up in basically having to survive and live
and live.
Well, you need to work. You need to work.
Didn't you have rich parents?
No.
Didn't they send? That's right. They didn't send you to private schools. I keep forgetting. You went to. You're a public educated lad.
Well.
Yeah. I forgot. All right. So, what did you do after you left La Trobe?
Well, went overseas for a while. I worked worked in England. I worked in Ireland on a farm.
Oh. You went to Ireland. Was that the first time you went to Ireland?
No, I'd been there as a kid as well.
What, to meet relatives?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was that like?
I was very young then.
Very young.
Very young.
So when you went back to
But you can, you can sort of remember. You can remember some of the family and some you don't want to remember perhaps, but there's some that you do remember.
All right. So was it... That's interesting. Did any of them speak Gaelic or was that...
No, no. Like that's that? In certain areas, the Gaeltacht areas.
But not Cork,
which is,
but not Cork.
No, around Galway. Yeah. Around Galway, there are a lot of Gaelic speakers around the west. But, not where my family are from.
So what, the west was less colonised by the British, was it? Is that why they kept their Gaelic or...?
Well, the issue of Gaelic is probably not necessarily... directly down to colonisation, more a case of, the education system, and how English is imposed on an education system and the restrictions on that. In the West, I guess it's probably more remote, and so it allows a certain amount of survival. But in other areas, it's not necessarily going to survive because there are restrictions during the time when all of Ireland was part of Britain. The medium in education was English, and to the same extent Welsh, which was also a language which suffered considerably with English interference, and it's only in recent years that Welsh language has really taken off. And interestingly enough, one of the things that helped instigate that in Wales was Welsh language cartoons. They had these Welsh language cartoons. Mm-hmm. Super Ted, I think, was in
Super
Welsh.
Ted.
Yeah,
right.
And I think they also did Banana Man or something in Welsh.
What? So Channel. How about Banana in Pyjamas? Yeah, they would have.
No.
Copyright, mate. Copyright. They're using bananas in Welsh.
Well, this is a banana.
A banana, not two.
Not
oh,
B1,
right.
No,
okay, all
B2.
Right. No
different,
copyright.
Different bananas.
Yeah,
so no
yeah,
copyright
yeah,
yeah. infringement.
Could be Cam Edition.
But it was Channel, I think Channel SC4, which is the Welsh language station, and they introduced these cartoons, which is a really good step because what you're doing, as you were saying before, you get the child. So you get the children at that young age to be exposed to Welsh. And the Welsh language has really been pulled from the brink in recent years because probably all started from that. Well, not completely. You can't attribute it completely.
But
certainly
it.
That made a big difference to having Welsh.
You don't look like a farm worker to me, mate. You said you went to work on a farm in Ireland.
Horse farm, yeah.
Horse farm,
yeah.
What did you do there? Feed the horses?
Shovel shit, basically.
Shovel shit.
Did a lot of shoveling
shit.
What do
you mean? It was a stallion producing farm?
No, they used to school hunting horses.
Hunting,
yeah, like fox hunts.
The good old British influence.
Fox hunts.
Yeah.
And jumping, show jumping.
Oh, show jumping. Oh, God.
Yeah. Like steeple chasing, all these sorts of things.
How long did you last there for?
Oh, a few months. But it was quite interesting because I quite liked riding horses.
Mm-hmm.
Good, used to get the opportunity because I didn't have a car, so if I had to run down the street and get something, because it was rural Ireland, you used to jump on a horse and ride the horse down.
Well, the only horse I've ever ridden, you'll find this hilarious, is an Icelandic horse. And they're so bloody short. If you're a tall bloke, your feet nearly touch the ground.
Because they were brought by the Vikings.
Yeah, and you wonder, these huge Vikings on these little horses.
But they just wanted strong ponies or whatever, principally for work as well, animals.
Because there were no roads. Now, getting back, so how long did you last overseas for?
I came back in... 88, I think. Yeah, I came back in 88.
So you've gone, what, 3 or 4 years?
No.
Just a year?
Yeah, just a
gap year. Deferred.
We'll call it just over a year.
We'll call it a deferred year, not a gap year.
Just over a year and came back.
So you came back with nothing in your pocket, obviously. What did you do for a crust?
I moved around in various jobs, you know, retail.
You don't look like the type of bloke who'd be nice to somebody at retail, did you? You know, were you pretty rude to your customers?
No, not at all.
You sure?
I was extremely polite.
You're extremely polite. Thank you. Have a nice day. All that stuff.
Yes. And sold insurance at one stage. Yeah, that was fun. House to house, was it? Did I just say that under my breath? Oh, that was...
Yeah, you said the F word under your breath. I heard it.
Yeah, that was...
You loved that, did you? Percentages, did you get? Did you get paid on that amount of insurance you sold?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
And obviously, I didn't do very well at that.
Because you got an ethical. I think you got an ethical aspect to you.
I just didn't have the motivation.
No, you didn't want to exploit little old people for nothing.
Yeah, I didn't have the motivation. So after that, I just bummed around. I actually drove taxis for a while.
Any copulation in the back seat while you're driving taxis?
Well, yeah, I drove nights and you will get that.
You'll get that. Can't wait till I get home.
Did you remind you finish the shift and you hose out the back of the taxi.
Did you remind them of the $200 fee to clean out?
Yeah, it was the vomit.
Yeah.
Oh, it was shocking. I mean, this is, you know, yeah, driving nights was not something, it was certainly an eye-opener, but, geez, some of the things you used to see.
And you didn't have cameras in those days.
There were no cameras in taxis then.
Did you ever feel threatened at all?
There was probably one time I remember when I did shit myself a little because these guys were going out to where was it? It was Lilydale.
Oh, that's a long trip. You would have rubbed your hands saying.
And you think, Lilydale, that's all right. Yeah. But it wasn't actually Lilydale. It was past Lilydale as you go up into the Dandenongs.
Well, not quite as far as that, but it was off the Warburton Highway actually. Yeah.
And this is like probably I don't know 2-3 in the morning.
Yeah.
And there's no fucking street lights or anything, and it's just you see us enormous trees. The sort of, you know, it's. Like the sort of forests where they find bodies that have been there for 10 years.
How many blokes in the back seat?
Oh, I think we dropped one off earlier on, and they successively went to different areas. But of course, it was fine.
Yeah, it was fine as it turned out.
But you sort of think, Lilydale, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
But then you're going out, and there's just forests. There's just the enormous trees, you know. Like, and you're thinking, hang on, this is serial killer territory here. This is not looking good.
So when did you find yourself at 3CR?
That was during my uni days.
Yeah.
That was when I was doing. Yeah, when I was at uni.
Why did you come to 3CR while you were at uni?
No, that was because I, you know, my interest in Irish history,
yeah,
and Irish politics,
yeah,
took me to the Irish community and one of the programs that they used to have on here.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. You know this. I'm not kidding.
No, I don't know anything. You're kidding. What? You came to 3CR through the Irish community?
Yeah, through the Irish program they used to have here on Saturday mornings.
I can't remember what it was. I've been here since 77. What was the bloody program called?
It was the Connolly Association.
Oh, then? I thought they all died out. Connolly Association.
That's a nice thing to say.
Well, this is the trouble. This is when you put me in my place and you say, no way, Joe.
No way, Joe.
Yeah.
So the Connolly Association program, that was Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it now. So, you know, it was Saturday morning and it was live, of course.
Yeah, of course. And if you'd been out Friday night. Yeah, which most Irish would have been.
And then you know, I'd set the alarm
yeah.
for... probably 6 o'clock or something, so I could get here at 8:30 or whatever it was. And you know, having had
copious amounts of green beer, yes.
No, but more the sleep,
mostly
2-3 hours of sleep. And I couldn't do that now. No way. But Saturday mornings, and we used to do the program live, just in that studio, just over there. Not this one.
No. Oh, this is for good guests. This is for guests.
And I thought, it's been 40 years or something since I've come here.
Lord, hang on. How long did you last on the Colony program for?
Actually, when I was at uni and when I got back, when I got back from overseas, quite a few years.
So how many of you were there on the show?
Oh, numbers varied.
He's thinking. Yeah. This is a live bloody interview,
I'm counting on my fingers. I'm going to take my shoes off and count on my toes.
So that many Irish?
Look, the numbers vary. You'd probably have about five people in that studio. Four or five people in the studio. Yeah.
And how long was the program for?
Good question.
It is a good question.
Theoretically.
Because I've heard about your mob.
Theoretically, half an hour.
Really?
Theoretically, half an hour.
Yeah.
But what happened? Unfortunately, sometimes we used to go a little bit overtime.
Well, there was a lot of activity in Northern Ireland in those days.
We used to go a little bit overtime, and that was unfortunate.
Did you do any kind of crossovers, phone calls to Ireland?
We didn't have things like Skype or Zoom.
But you had a phone.
A landline, not a mobile phone.
Yeah, a landline. I used to do interviews overseas with a landline.
Well, you were probably less technologically challenged than we were.
So did you actually...
We would sometimes have guests.
Guests? People. What type of people?
People who would come out from Ireland or visiting musicians. We had visiting musicians occasionally.
You're kidding.
Would I kid you?
Yes. No. Visiting musicians.
Hang on.
There was
a band called Boys of the Lock, an Irish band.
Sounds like a Boys of the Lock.
And we had
Scots that have been lost.
We had them out. We had them on the program live. We had a few guest musicians over the years. Invariably, sometimes we went over time, and I still feel guilty about that.
Who are you going to apologise to now?
That was, I think, the Radioactive program. And they used to be waiting outside the door there for us to finish.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the clock, and we don't have a clock in this studio
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
But I'd be looking at the clock and thinking, oh, no, we're eating into their time again.
And you didn't care.
I did. We did care. I cared. And I feel terrible about it to this day.
Look, Phil, I just alert the listeners before we started this little chat. It's not an interview, obviously, but before we started the chat, Michaela set us all up to have a chat, and she does the Radioactive program now, and she accepted your apology. So you don't have to feel guilty anymore. So she accepted your apology, and so it's all is forgiven. So you are allowed to come to the birthday party on the 4th of July, 11 a.m, Collingwood Town Hall. I'm going to ask you a trick question, Phil, because you live in Crisborough. You won't know the answer. Where is the Collingwood Town Hall? What suburb?
Fitzroy.
Abbotsford. Where is 20?
No, because I'm thinking of that one near the cop station.
Yeah, well, that's Fitzroy there. That Collingwood Town Hall is over there.
Yeah, but what's that hall?
Fitzroy.
That's Fitzroy Town Hall.
That's the Fitzroy Town Hall.
Okay.
Collingwood Town Hall.
Now I realise, Collingwood Town Hall is the other one on Hoddle Street. Yeah.
We're pointing
east.
And then we're pointing...
That's
northwest.
Right. But when you said trick question, I thought...
Trick question. No, that's because you'd think Collingwood Town Hall would be in Collingwood, wouldn't you?
That's why I thought, it's probably...
and it's in Abbotsford. People are going to get confused.
I know the boundary between Collingwood and Fitzroy is often a bit...
Any notable moments on the Colony show, did you... Were you part of Terrorist Radio? You know, do you have guests from the IRA here?
No, nothing like that. No, not when I was doing it. No,
Not when I was just music.
On.
Just music. No politics.
No, I know there was politics. There was politics, and there was news.
Yeah,
And, you know, of course, you, and don't want to patronise you, but of course you've got to remember this before. This is before the days of the digital world that we have now.
Yeah.
And it was important in actually keeping people informed of events. So you would have at the end of the program, you'd have something on any upcoming events, musical, cultural, you know, Irish dance, Irish music, whatever. And that was the way you would actually get that message out to people that were interested or wanting to know that sort of information, because there was no, you know, you didn't go on the internet and look at these things back then. So it did have a fairly important role to actually keep people in the Irish community out in Melbourne informed.
Now, I was going to ask you something. This question has always bugged me now, and I've never had the opportunity. I've got an Irish historian who was involved for a number of years on an Irish program here at 3CR. Now, I've heard this story, and it sounds like a lot of bullshit to me, but obviously you would know these things, whether it's bullshit or not. You know, you'd know whether it's bullshit or not. Now, I heard that Irish dancers don't use their hands because they used to dance in the pub when the British were there, and that's why they didn't use their hands, because the British could see their hands moving, you know, outside the pub, because obviously all those cultural things, like, was it the lyre that they used to play that was banned by the British? What was that musical instrument?
I don't think the harp was ever banned.
Yes, it was.
But interesting.
Yeah, why don't they use their bloody hands? What's going on there, mate?
Well, I don't know. I don't think it's anything to do with, like, the British soldiers were watching, because they would be like hands up or something surrendering.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's a cult. I think it's just a cultural thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was because it developed, and I could be wrong in this, but because, look, I can't dance, I've got two left feet, but it's all in the footwork,
right? Yeah,
you know, when they have competitions, they're judging on your footwork,
yeah,
and so the hands are to some extent irrelevant. Hands are down by their sides.
It's the only culture that I'm aware of where people dance not using their hands. Is this something peculiar Irish? Do the Scots, are the Scots the same?
Well, no, because it's only that type of Irish dancing.
Ah.
There are forms of dancing where, of course, they do use their hands. They have set dances and, you know.
he's moving up his hands up and down,
I'm simulating dancing, but, of course, I've got two left feet. But, so they do use their hands in other types of dancing.
Yeah.
But I don't think the harp was ever banned. The bagpipes were banned in Scotland after Culloden.
Oh, right, they were banned, but not the harp in Ireland.
No, not the harp. Oh. But they actually, this is an interesting bit of history, after Culloden, there was a piper who was arrested with a lot of the other clansmen who were arrested by the English. And at his trial, his argument was that he was not a soldier. Mm-hmm. He didn't actively take part in the rebellion, because he wasn't a soldier. He was a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And he just played his pipes. But the English judge said that no Highland regiment or troop had ever marched without bagpipes.
Right.
And therefore, the bagpipes are an instrument of war, and so he was treated as an insurgent, and he was hanged.
Hanged, yeah, I can understand.
And he was hanged for that.
Look, I thought.
And the bagpipes, prescribed instrument, and actually on the statute books to this day, technically you cannot go into the Houses of Parliament with a set of bagpipes, because it is considered a weapon of war.
Oh. How about the Irish bagpipe? Tell us about that.
Well, You've got a couple of different bagpipes in Ireland, because you have got mouth-blown bagpipes. They do have mouth-blown bagpipes and use essentially the same bagpipe that Highland bagpipes. Sometimes you'll find they've only got two drones instead of the standard three you'd see on Highland pipes. Mm-hmm. That's often a peculiar thing with Irish pipe bands. But they do use the mouthbone Highland pipes. But there's also, of course, the Illan pipes, which are the ones probably people hear most often and would associate with Ireland. And they're bellows blown. So they're not mouth blown. You actually inflate the bag with the bellows.
Right. Yeah.
They're a lot quieter mm-hmm. than the Highland bagpipes, so you're not going to send yourself deaf. And well, I say that because, seriously, the decibel range, the decibel range for Highland bagpipes is right up there with power tools.
Really?
So, yeah, you will affect your hearing. Mm. So Illan pipes, a lot quieter. They're more an indoor instrument, and you'll play those indoors with a session with other musicians.
Do you play the bagpipes?
I play the Illan pipes, yes.
Yeah? How long does...
Not particularly well, yeah, but I do play them.
But how long did it take you to learn? Is it hard? I mean, I've got a...
As with any instrument, it has its difficulties, and it has its certain peculiarities,
yeah,
which are unlike any other sort of instrument.
Mm.
But look, one of the hardest things is to actually probably get your head around the fact that you're not actually playing the note, not like a flute or something where you're actually inflating the bag. And the bag is your reservoir of air.
Right.
And that's what's giving you the air to power the reed.
Mm. Is there any other cultures you're aware of that use the same type of bagpipe?
You have bagpipes all over the world.
All over the world.
All over the world.
Right.
And there's... So you've got a bagpipe in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the sackpipa. Okay. In Germany, they have bagpipes and they're called... Try not to laugh. Doodlesack.
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 Yeah. Oh, that's all right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We've all got doodlesacks.
Doodlesack.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
In Italy, it's zampogna.
Zampogna. Yeah.
In Spain, gaita, and parts of France as well. They also use that same terminology. And also cabaret is another form of bagpipe in France as well. So all over Europe you'll get different types of bagpipes, all with their own peculiarities, and all they'll all have their different sounds.
And did you play in a band or...?
No, just generally play at Irish pub or something.
Mm. So how long did you last here at 3CR? How many years do you reckon? Oh, he's thinking.
I really don't know.
A decade?
Oh, no. I think it was on and off for probably about 4 or 5 years. I mean, that includes a sort of a spell away, but certainly, in the mid-late 80s. Yeah.
Mid to late 80s. Yeah. Oh, that's good. So, I've always had a soft spot for the Connolly Association because... And I felt very sad when the last time they came to Eureka to lay wreaths at the Eureka graves, because that was something they did every year because of the number of Irish that are buried in the mass grave there, about 10 out of the 25. And I remember the last year they came because they'd basically run out of people.
Yeah. Mm. And as you said, they used to do the Eureka, the Eureka pilgrimage, if you will, because, of course... Peter Lawler, and that is how you pronounce the name, Lawler, not Laylaw, not like the suburb.
Right.
It's Peter Lawler, was, of course, Irish.
And so many of the others that were involved.
He did actually have an Irish accent, and he didn't sound like Chips Rafferty at all.
No, and he was a turncoat too. But we won't talk about his later life.
But his brother was a man called James Fintan Lawler.
Yeah.
And back in Ireland, he was active in something called the Young Islanders.
That's right. And he was imprisoned and then he was released because he was dying, and he died a few months later. I know a bit about Irish history, Phil. Yeah. You may not think I do, but I do. So what did you do after you left 3CR? I mean, I can't see that you've made much money in life, mate.
I mean, well, thanks a lot.
Well, up till the mid 1980s, it doesn't mean anything. But you know, did you stay on the dole, or did you move into some profession, or what did you do?
Look, I was a one-off public servant, and worked briefly in the funeral industry as well.
Funeral industry. Yeah. That's interesting. How long were you in the funeral industry for?
Few years.
Did you beautify the dead?
No.
What did you do? Sell like insurance?
No.
What did you do in the funeral industry?
I basically was one of the assistants, attendants at funeral services.
Right.
Or you'd drive the hearse.
Yep. Never had any crashes?
No.
Any kids?
No.
No. Oh, that's one less burden. No. Any animals?
No.
Oh, God, you're the epitome of freedom, aren't you? No kids, no animals.
Well, these days you have to be careful when you have avian flu. I mean, people that have chickens are now a little worried.
Worried, are they?
Well, they thought keeping chickens in the backyard.
Be a good thing.
Good thing. Yeah. Easy, low maintenance. Yeah. Now.
Yeah. Look, I mean, to be serious, if it spreads, they're going to have to kill all their backyard chickens, all their friends.
No, it's sad. Worry.
It really is a worry. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you saw how it went through the seal population in that
Heard Island. Yeah.
Heard Island.
Yeah.
They think something like 75% to 90% of the seal pups.
Yeah, died. Yeah.
So, I mean,
it's pretty evil.
That's scary.
Yeah, it's pretty evil.
You extrapolate that if that was to actually cross over into species crossover from avian flu to another mammal, primates, for example. That's us.
Are you suggesting something? Well, then
we're in a lot of trouble.
We wouldn't have an overpopulation problem. That's the way I put it.
And there'd be plenty of houses available.
Exactly.
There'd be plenty of houses.
It's a little bit after like the Black Death, or you're a historian. Remember the Crusaders? They go off and they never come back. And there was a law passed that if nobody had inhabited for 20 years, you could just claim it as your own.
Just have it.
Yeah, and these days it could be the same thing here, you know. Wow. Well, there's always a silver lining to every cloud, Phil.
Yes, that's right, always a silver lining. But I think avian flu, that might be a bit of a worry. Yeah. We're just waiting for the next pandemic anyway, after COVID.
Yeah, well, the good thing is we're old, we'll die before then. Now,
well, maybe
getting back,
not. Yeah, may I don't want to sound pessimistic, but maybe not.
So what are you doing these days?
These days? These days I probably can't talk about it.
You can't talk about it. You've joined the CIA, have you?
No.
You're doing black ops?
No.
Nothing like that?
No.
Retired?
Semi-retired.
Semi-retired. That covers a lot of sins. Semi-retired. Covers a lot of sins. You're semi-retired, half retired, and you can't talk about what you're doing, and you're dressed in black. What's going on here, Phil? What are we going
to
expose?
Only because I don't need to separate my colours when I do a wash.
Exactly. That's what they all say.
That's the reason. ASIS? Seriously, that is
you're
the reason.
You're part of ASIS? ASIA?
No.
Nothing like that?
No. Nothing like that, no.
What department did you work in the public service?
Lots of them.
Lots of them? How evasive can you get, Phil?
I worked in tax for a while.
Tax?
That's a bit of a dirty word.
No. Well, the thing is, they don't need you people anymore in tax. It's all automated.
Well,
you know, corporations.
That's unfortunately, that's the worry that I think we should all have now with AI.
Yeah.
Because there's all this talk, AI, there'll be hundreds of jobs. But the reality is, whenever there's been a shift in technology, there are jobs that are created, but there's a lot of job losses. And, of course, this is what happened when you go to, America, where manufacturing just shut down, and there were a lot of people without jobs, and there was no attempt at reskilling.
That's right.
No attempt at getting people out of the predicament of where they were. And, there's a lot of complex things going on in American politics, but there's part of the reason why you look at the rise of populism in American politics. And Bernie Sanders, I think, said it very eloquently when he was expressing that the Democrats had this almost surprise that they'd lost the election, the last election to Trump.
Yeah.
And he said, why should we be surprised that the electorate has actually abandoned us when we have abandoned our voting base?
Now, I'm going to ask you a serious question, Phil, because you've nearly survived the 56 minutes.
I thought that was serious, what I was just talking about.
No, everybody knows that. That wasn't you, mate. I mean, what do you think are the greatest threats that we face as a nation? I mean, you were born here, been here a long time, you're involved in secret activities.
Seriously, AI. And we'll go back to an Australian example.
Right.
All fresh in our minds with Scott Morrison and robo-debt.
Yep.
And you would think that that being so recent in history that they would have taken that into account when they look at this algorithm when they were plotting people's care packages.
Yep.
And you've seen on the news recently that the gentleman that had motor neuron disease and needed a very high level of
was
care.
Was denied,
and was denied. Computer says no. And that was the thing that I always sort of jokingly would say that to people. It's going to be like computer says no.
No,
and that's exactly what's happened. Mm. And it can't be overwritten either, the algorithm.
Yeah,
there's no review. And that is really... That is scary.
It is scary.
I think one of the major threats we're going to face, because it's only going to get worse, because AI is going to be introduced, whether you like it or not, because government departments are all going to say, well, we're accountable for our expenditure. We have to cut back on our expenditure. How do we do that? Wages. So you replace people with AI. And there's, as we've seen here, no review.
No review. Yeah, it's an exceptionally difficult situation we find ourselves in, I agree, because, you know, the greatest instability occurs when a large number of people lose their ability to earn an income. It's that simple.
Exactly,
And that's what AI is going to do. I mean, I always propose the Roman solution, bread and circuses. They had that problem with the plebeians because they brought in slaves. They didn't need plebeians, but they had some political power. So they provided them subsidised food, subsidised housing, 246 paid holidays every year, and that's how they resolved their AI problem. It's the same concept.
Yeah.
If people don't need to be employed, what are you going to do with them?
Hmm.
Do you bring in avian flu and kill them all, or do you provide them with some alternative, like a universal basic income? You know, that's the, you know.
And we've seen in recent years the enormous gap between the exceptionally wealthy and the exceptionally poor, and even the average person. You know, mega wealth.
Mega wealth, yeah.
And I remember seeing a documentary where they were talking about the average CEO, how much they earned 30 years ago.
Right, yeah.
And it was, you know, whatever times someone's average salary. Mm. Now it's gone, you know, 10 times beyond that.
Well, Phil, thank you for being a 3CR fossil and coming in to tell us about the bad old days or the good old days. We've been chatting, not interviewing, and he's spoken for 56 minutes and he can't believe it, and he's got more to say to Phil Dalliston, Dalliston. The staff here at 3CR are going to take your photo, and then we're going to podcast this chat, and you'll be there for all eternity. Thank you very much, Phil, and hopefully we'll see you on the 4th of July for the 50th anniversary celebrations.
Thank you. And in the words of Jesse Ventura, the former wrestler and mayor of Minnesota, the pleasure's been all yours.
Thank you.
That the dice are loaded, everybody rolls with is cross. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.